Good morning. My name is Joanna, and I'm humbled and grateful for this opportunity to preach today. In my year and a half attending TAB, I felt so welcomed by this community at a time where I was desperately seeking a change in my spiritual life. As some of you know, I arrived at TAB as a lifelong practicing Catholic. I've spent the last 12 years of my life and career in Catholic young adult ministry, first as a collegiate campus minister, and now as the director of a postgraduate volunteer program. I found my way to most of my closest friends in adulthood through these small Catholic communities of former volunteers and campus ministers. It was even this group that brought my husband into my life. Yet despite all of this, I felt my ties to the Catholic Church begin to slowly unravel. All of a sudden, my relationship to the Catholic Church started to feel like the old worn sweater in the back of my dresser drawer. I used to love it. When I wore it, I felt like me. But slowly, almost without me realizing it, it started to become ill-fitting and uncomfortable, pilling and hugging all of the wrong places. I'm still not quite sure what happened. Did it shrink? Has it gone out of fashion? Or have I grown and changed in a way in which it now feels constricting? What I do know is that it just doesn't look so good on me anymore. And I'm starting to wonder what others think I might believe when I wear it. I started to realize that I could no longer worship authentically as part of an institution that is confused, to put it mildly, on issues of inclusion. I still believe deeply in the good of much of the Catholic grassroots work I've witnessed with my own eyes. But I can no longer allow an institution that does not value the voices of women and queer individuals to be the vehicle by which I experience, and most importantly, live Jesus' gospel message. Well, this is a topic for a whole other sermon, or perhaps my memoir. I share it with you because it's significant to how I got up here today. Despite the fact that I've dedicated over a third of my life in service to the Catholic Church, I will never be able to proclaim the gospel or preach during liturgy, simply because I'm a woman. I'm embarrassed to admit that I allowed myself to accept this for so long. Despite pushing back against the patriarchy of the church, I'm shocked at how deeply I've managed to internalize this message of male leadership. It's been an ongoing point of reflection for me. I've been moved beyond words by the voices I have heard preach here at TAB. Voices that I would have never heard had I not finally stepped out of the four walls of the Catholic Church. These voices even made me wonder what could have been possible for me had I not been relegated to the sidelines in my most formative years of faith development. And while I still feel wholly unqualified to stand here before you today, when Katie offered me this opportunity several months ago, for all of these reasons that I shared, I knew that I had to say yes. However, I was also slightly terrified. I'm not a theologian, and I could stand to be more familiar with Scripture generally. Advent seemed like a safe choice for my first preaching endeavor, a time when I find myself naturally reflecting, especially about patience and waiting. Every Advent, I'm reminded that I don't wait well. At bus stops, in the grocery store checkout line, waiting for the green light on the 60th minute of my commute, I often find my heartbeat increasing and my mind thinking about what else I could be doing if only SEPTA was on time or more checkout lanes were open or traffic was clear. I'm not that great with process either. Someone recently used the phrase in conversation, driving the car while building it, and boy, did that resonate with me. I really like to get to that end goal, and when it excites me, I don't often have the patience for all of the pieces in the middle that are necessary to get me there. For a long time for me, Advent was about practicing patience, about slowing down and trying to do only one thing at a time. Today's readings provide a different perspective. First, I was caught off guard by the imagery of the impending desert bloom in Isaiah. I pretty much only think of the desert as a Lenten setting, and this description seemed to starkly contrast the quiet, stillness, and darkness that I associate with Advent. And then I got to Matthew. In this reading, John the Baptist is in prison and is getting word of Jesus' ministry. He sends some folks out to confirm that this is really it, that Jesus is the real deal. Jesus confirms that yes, he is who they've been waiting for, as proven by his ministry to those on the margins. While, of course, Jesus' confirmation that he is Messiah is momentous, it's John the Baptist's words, "Are you the one who is to come, or are we to wait for another?" that struck me. This sentence is often read as an example of John the Baptist's doubt, an explanation that makes sense, but perhaps fails to fully encapsulate what he is expressing. John the Baptist's ministry to prepare for Jesus' coming has driven his entire unconventional life, from living in the wilderness, to eating locusts and honey, to wearing basically rags for clothes. And now, Jesus is finally here. Perhaps then, John the Baptist is expressing the trepidation that comes with being almost ready to exit the wilderness. Here he is, wrestling with having not only a deep longing, but also fearing the unknown of what the end of the waiting might bring. I can only imagine what must be on his mind. Is Jesus' ministry what John the Baptist expected and prepared for? What must it feel like for John the Baptist to know that his life's work is ending? Does he feel that he's been cast aside by God? After all, the desert is finally beginning to bloom, but John the Baptist is unable to witness it. This has far-reaching implications for our own lives. I'm sure that we can all identify a moment where we felt like John the Baptist, hesitant and fearful to finally embrace what will end our longing. In these moments, if we are wrong and our longing isn't quite over, perhaps the letdown will be worse than the waiting. At the very least, when we are longing, the holding pattern of waiting becomes familiar. We live in it, and therefore we already know how to do it. But on the other hand, if we are correct, it means we have to look at our new situation square in the face, fear and all. I've thought a lot about where God is in all of this, both with John the Baptist in this moment, but also in the times in my own life where my fears and longings have intersected. I don't think that God is absent, but it often feels that God is. It's been a long time since I've pictured God as an old man with a white beard in the sky, carefully plotting the trajectory of my life, point by point, in a nice, neat, linear fashion. Yet in these moments at the edge of the wilderness, I revert back to searching for a God that will deliver me to my destination as efficiently as possible. A God I understand. A God that operates the way I expect. A God I find in all of the usual places. I think this is why John the Baptist's words, "Are you the one who is to come, or are we to wait for another?" leapt off the page at me. These words, human words, full of realness, ask us to practice seeking God in its unlikely forms. John the Baptist is already realizing that Jesus is coming to him in an unexpected way. While studying this reading, it was an important discovery for me to realize that John the Baptist probably didn't know what the coming of the Messiah was going to be like. He also may have thought that the Messiah would bring upon a powerful judgment. Examples from history likely would have led John the Baptist to expect judgment to look like oppression, but it's not oppression, it's liberation. Soon John the Baptist will receive the news that Jesus' healing ministry is turning everything on its head. The blind can see, the deaf can hear. Folks so sick that they have been outcast from society have been healed. And of course, it's the marginalized who are receiving the good news. What an example this provides for us. What if the resolution to our longing comes in a manner we could not yet imagine? What if in the midst of our longing, God is preparing to heal us? John the Baptist reminds us to stop looking for God only when things are neat and tidy. We need to fully commit to searching for God, even in places where we think God couldn't possibly be. places that make us uncomfortable or uneasy, or just don't seem to make sense. We need to explore the surprising ways that Jesus is healing us when we feel alone and abandoned in these moments of transition. Advent provides a natural time to renew this practice. In 10 short days, Jesus arrives again to heal our broken world in the unlikely form of a poor refugee child. At the time of Jesus' birth, the arrival of the Son of God as a powerless baby was unbelievable. It seemed impossible. But today, this story has become familiar to us. We're used to looking for Jesus in the manger. Instead, what if we looked for Jesus in the places where we've already decided that we won't find him? I've spent the last year and a half of my life in the desert. This time has been marked with immeasurable loss. There has been loss that has tested the limits of my body and the depths of my resilience. It is a loss tied to my own longings and hope. There has been loss of my Catholic identity. I chose to step away, a liberating decision. But I still grieve losing my optimism that the Catholic Church could change. And just this fall, I watched my husband lose his remaining parent. I am yearning for the desert bloom. I'm also wondering if I've misunderstood this season of my life. I thought that God is calling me to practice patience, to slow down, and to learn how to live without all the answers. That might still be true. But I can't seem to wait without envisioning an hourglass, sand steadily streaming to the bottom, representing the time I've lost. Even when I wait for SEPTA or sit in traffic, watching my commute balloon from minutes to hours, I feel the time is being stolen from me. And I wonder if I'm giving the time away because I just can't find the quickest route out of the wilderness. But this is where I think I've got it wrong. If I view this time only in terms of what I lost, I'm neglecting to recognize God in the unlikely. I'm skipping over the moments of grace. I'm not noticing the places where the crocus is just beginning to bud. Maybe my way out of the wilderness isn't as linear as a path. Maybe instead the exit comes by fully opening myself to God's healing. Because the truth is, it hasn't been all doom and gloom. I do feel that I found ways to seek God in the midst of the desert. I can point to the ways I'm growing and changing. John the Baptist's words have given me pause to think that maybe I need to continue to look in some new places. It's just possible that some of those places are where it's been too difficult to look. This Advent season has inspired in me a desire to deepen my practice of patience and to wait without keeping one eye on the clock. Instead, to practice sitting in the spots in the wilderness that still provoke fear. I encourage you over the next 10 days to examine what desert you are in. Can you name the deepest longings of your heart? Are they for you, or for your relationships, or for our country, or our world, or even our environment? In what areas of your life are fear and trepidation intersecting with hope? And most importantly, what can you do to seek God in the most unlikely places? May Advent allow us to open our eyes to the places where God is already waiting to heal us. Amen.